the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, I'm Trevor Dan. Thank you for joining us for the April 2020 lockdown edition of Radio Today's Roundtable podcast. Well, these are weird times to be sure, but we're connected by the miracle of IPDTL. So as far as we can, it's business as usual. Let's find out who's round our virtual table and indeed where they are. Ellie.
Hello, this is Eleanor Oldroyd from Radio 5 Live, and I am broadcasting via ISDN from my loft bedroom cum studio in southwest London.
I'm Graham Mack. I'm a van driver and I'm in Hitchin in Hertfordshire.
Hi, Trevor. I'm Ollie Mann. I'm a freelance presenter, currently host of Forethought for BBC Radio 4. But right now, I'm in my ensuite dressing room in Shenley, Hertfordshire, which appears to be the most soundproofed or at least distanced from my four-year-old boy that I can find.
So, Graham, I'm going to start with you because you were most recently at Fix Radio, a job which you knew you'd got last time you were on this podcast. And in between time, you took the job and now you're not doing that anymore. And describing yourself as a van driver, that's not entirely fair. You're an award-winning broadcaster. What are you actually doing with yourself in lockdown?
Well, I've done a few bits and pieces for people. I've auditioned for a lot of voiceover work. I've done an interview on podcast radio about my disastrous trip to New Zealand. And I've made a demo for a London radio station, but just bits and pieces. But this afternoon, I'm hiring a van. And from tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., I'm picking up medical supplies and I'm going to be delivering to pharmacies throughout the south of England 6 days a week.
Well, Graham Mack is officially a good bloke. Ellie, what's it like broadcasting then? I mean, you're used to sailing into the BBC in Salford and having lots of people running around after you. Now, as you say, you're in your attic bedroom. What are the big differences for you in terms of actually communicating with a listener?
Yeah, actually, I had to emphasise the attic bedroom aspect of it because we did have a listener text in at the weekend on Weekend Breakfast to say, so you're in your loft, Ellie. That sounds a bit Jane Eyre-ish to me. But no, it is a quite nicely appointed loft conversion. But it is strange. I mean, I miss my colleagues. It's, you know, you. I have never appreciated the teams that we have, you know, because we're lucky to have decent sized teams on our news programmes and the studio managers and studio directors that we work with every week. I've never appreciated them more because I'm not with them. And of course, they're having to go into the studios in Salford, generally speaking. I mean, it's a smaller team than would usually be there, but they don't have the luxury of social distancing because stuff has to go, you know, I mean, I don't want to get technical about this, but somebody has to press the button to send it to the transmitter, basically. And so all the presenters, you know, I mean, not all the presenters are broadcasting from home, but a lot of us are on 5 Live. And I'm finding it interesting. You know, there is obviously the luxury of being able to go straight to your bed if you've just come off air at 9 o'clock, having got up at 4:15. But on the other hand, you are still very much at home. And when you're talking about really quite stressful, distressing, sad, worrying things, you want to be able to cut yourself off from that sometimes. And so I've had to sort of move my broadcast equipment away from my bed. So it's not the first thing I see in the morning when I wake up, because we all have to have little breaks from the really upsetting news that we're talking about a lot of the time.
Just to get a little bit technical, what have you got to broadcast to the nation from? What are you surrounded by, and perhaps what are you not having access to that you would normally?
Well, I've got almost everything I need, really. I've got an ISDN point, which I've had actually for quite some time in my house, which was installed so that I could do down-the-line interviews. If I wasn't in Salford for any reason, I could do interviews with sports people who could only do a set time. I've never used it so much in my life. And then I've got a standard Glensound Kubi, which is what I take on outside broadcasts. So normally I'd be using this from cricket or from the Olympics or wherever else I'm doing sporting OBs. And the microphone is, if you really want to get that technical, it's a Beyer Dynamic, and headphones and so on. But then I've got my laptop, which has got Open Media set up, which of course is our standard news script and production system now. And the only thing I don't have really is the ability to talk back to my producer. So the producer can talk to me if we're live on air, but I can't talk back to them, which I think if you're a producer, you probably think is actually a bonus if you've got presenters less able to give you back chat the whole time.
I think one of the interesting things listening both to 5 Live but also to Radio 4 is how we're just getting used to the fact that professional broadcast quality isn't absolutely necessary. We're putting up with what engineers would have told us was unbroadcastable quality. Ollie, what do you think as a listener, before we talk about you presenting, what have you heard and what do you make of the variation in sound quality?
Yeah, it's fascinating because obviously I'm kind of a radio person, so I'm aware of it and we're all aware of it listening to this. But actually, I think if the presenters themselves weren't routinely mentioning where it was that they were, I'm not sure it would be immediately obvious to any of the listeners at all. I mean, Ian Dale, who was a guest on this show, in fact, last month, wasn't he? And he was talking about how being in the LBC studio, in his view, made him a better broadcaster because of the sort of whiz-bang TV cameras and you know, the sense of being on it and being at a live event. Actually, I've been listening to him broadcasting from his bedroom in Norfolk, and I think he sounds better. I mean, maybe not acoustically, but the difference that it's made in terms of his informality, his warmth, his humour, has actually, I think, made the show better. So I'm not sure I would notice, and the quality is certainly good enough that when you're listening like most people listening, either kind of driving a car, obviously that's not happening as much these days, but for people who are, or kind of in the kitchen whilst you're frying vegetables in the saucepan, I just don't think you notice.
I think that's a very interesting point, actually, Ollie, because I feel like that a little bit too, because obviously, you know, I've never felt such a direct connection to our listeners as we do at the moment, particularly on the breakfast programme. And actually, if you've got people phoning in to talk to GPs or to talk to people who've got an expertise in self-employed status and so on, you feel like you're talking to them very, very directly. And maybe it is about the fact that I've got my laundry basket to one side of me and I feel like I'm at home. It just feels like you are more directly connected to people listening at home in that way.
I found it quite interesting that I warmed to contributors who are described to me as Professor somebody who's in his kitchen or Doctor somebody who's in her bedroom in a way that I feel that I don't when I think, oh, they've had to get in their car and drag themselves all the way to Radio Derby or wherever they're broadcasting from. I think somehow people are, in a way, a bit more authentic.
Yeah, I found that too. I think the most interesting thing about the way things are now, not necessarily because people are remotely broadcasting, is that there's so many sad stories on right now, but you haven't heard very much tragedy porn. You haven't heard the, oh, we're talking to a lady now who lost her husband and, you know, how does it feel and all that. There hasn't been much of that. And I wonder if that's because people are at home and they're more connected to the audience and they realise how intrusive that is. Or there's just no need for it because there's so many stories.
Ollie, do you think we've got the balance right between news and information and entertainment and distraction, which are very important at times like this?
I think where it's gone wrong is in the shows that don't have a balance at all, if you see what I mean. I think the balance is right on the shows that make a feature out of having a balance. So in other words, you know, they feature the news and then they play a record. I mean, Radio 2 sounding brilliant, I think, at the moment for that reason. I think they've got the tone exactly right. Here's 3 minutes about what's going on and then here's 10 minutes of pleasant music and banter, and that's the right balance for them. I think the problem is some of the shows where it should be all about distraction have been taken off the air, on local radio in particular, because they're trying to focus on serving, you know, the crucial local coronavirus stuff. And I think that's a shame because people do feel a connection with their local presenters and with the schedule that they've come to know and love. And I think it's kind of your responsibility if you make a kind of escapist show, which one of my podcasts is. So I make a show with Helen Zaltzman called Answer Me This, which is a comedy Q&A show, which we've been running since 2007. We've made the deliberate decision to change the content. We are not doing any questions about illness, death, diseases, you know, stuff that would normally be funny. I mean, we normally choose anyway to get people out of themselves, but we might do a question, but we did a question about why is Jeremy Bentham's body on display at UCL, for example, a few months ago. We wouldn't do that now. Because we know that our audience are really desperately seeking a distraction. We don't even talk about travel because that's something that people can't do at the moment. We're not talking about face-to-face social interaction. We're talking about stuff that reflects people's worlds, stuff they can do at home without ever mentioning the virus at all. And I think if you're doing a comedy show, you should really double down on that.
Graham, you've done a lot of BBC local radio, and Ollie is right that some of those genre programmes have gone and been replaced by the wall-to-wall, let's just call it news and engagement. Do you think that's the right decision to take?
I don't know. I know it sounds very odd sometimes, though, when you listen to, like, the Today programme and then you still get, you know, it'd be followed by a programme about gardening and they'll talk about the pussy willow and the yew, and you think, hang on a minute. And then The Archers comes on. But then Radio 4's always been like that. I'm not sure whether Radio 4 should go a bit more newsy and leave the distraction to the likes of Radio 2. I don't know.
We had a discussion very early on with this on the Weekend Breakfast programme with my colleague Chris Warburton about tone and about how we are on the air in this incredibly uncertain, unprecedented time, which is new for everybody. And I kind of think that that's one of the things that in radio as a whole is so unique about this situation. But I think we just felt, right, we've got to be ourselves. We've got to be friendly. We've got to have a laugh if we can. We've got to be silly if we can. You know, not excessively silly and not pat and not trite about really serious subjects. But immediately afterwards, we got so many people getting in touch with us saying, thank you for just being normal. Thank you for being yourselves. And thank you for the familiarity. And I just think that that is something that we have maintained and want to try and maintain as well, just to kind of be warm and normal and as empathetic as we possibly can be.
Can I ask you what you all think about initiatives like the BBC Sing Along and the clapping for the NHS? Do you think they've worked so far?
It's difficult. I mean, when you lump those two things in together, I mean, rightly as a listener, they are kind of similar, but we all know that kind of from an infrastructure point of view, they're different. So, you know, behind the scenes, the decision to be part of the clapping for the NHS phenomenon is a decision that's taken to reflect something that the nation is doing anyway, possibly encourage it, but basically reflect a thing that listeners would be doing. Whereas something like the Great British Sing-Along, which is this kind of mass participation exercise across BBC popular music networks, personally, I feel a bit squeamish about that. I think because the BBC is so owning this anyway, because they're a trusted source of news and because of the resources that they have to provide entertainment, that for them to then kind of try and create an event on top of what is essentially a mass tragedy just kind of made me feel a bit awkward. Like, I could feel their corporate voice coming through when really music radio should all be about an intimate connection with the friendly person who's playing the record. So I personally don't want those gimmicks, but I acknowledge that obviously lots of people did like it and don't think that the strength is about that intimate connection, but that the strength is in having millions of people all doing the same thing at the same time. So I think there's a space for it, but personally, I'm a bit turned off by it.
I didn't listen to the Great British Sing-Along. I knew it was happening. I'm a big, big fan of all those brilliant presenters in the morning. You know, I listen to Greg James a lot in the morning. It's one of my kind of real mood enhancers. I think if you want to be part of it, then the option is there. If it lifts the mood of any number of people, if it lifts the mood of one person, then it's probably worth giving it a go. I mean, I suspect it's the kind of thing that will be revisited week on week, because I think we've gone from the stage of the first couple of weeks of the outbreak when the news was really grim and serious so much of the time and terrifying. And now we're in this, I mean, you know, and it will get more grim and serious on a major scale again, undoubtedly over the coming weeks. But there are still times, as I say, where you've just got to be able to carry on as normal. And if it makes somebody feel cheerful to sing along, and, you know, I went outside and clapped for the NHS on last week, and it did lift our mood, because actually I think what we're missing out on is this communality, this fact that we do things together. You know, we like to go to sports events, you know, we like to sing in choirs or do whatever it is. And actually, you know, I kind of get what you're saying, Ollie, about it seeming a bit faked to say, right, we're going to create this great communal moment. I think it's something that we need and we like, actually.
This is the Radio Today Roundtable for April. I'm Trevor Dan in West Cambridgeshire, and we'll be back, all of us, after this.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionics Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
We've got Ellie Oldroyd with us from Radio 5 Live's Weekend Breakfast Show. We've got Graham Mack from, oh, more radio stations in the past than we can think of. And we've got Ollie Mann from Answer Me This and The Modern Man and other projects. And Ellie, I'm going to come back to you first because, of course, you're coping with no sport. I mean, presumably you were due to go to Tokyo for the Olympics, were you not? So this you've fallen off a cliff in this sense.
Yeah, well, I remember filling in my diary probably kind of September last year, my diary for 2020. And it's now the biggest work of fiction out there because, of course, you know, it should have been filled with cricket. With cricket season is due to start domestically on Easter Sunday and then carry on all the way through till September. I was due to be going to my 12th Olympic Games, that's summer and winter, in Tokyo this summer as well. And yeah, it's a huge part of what I love doing. You know, it's the thing that I enjoy broadcasting. It's a thing that I love watching. And it's, but you know, if you'd said to me, I mean, after last summer's cricket season, which was the one of the greatest summers of my life, really, and, you know, the World Cup and the Ashes and so on, if you'd said to me at the end of that season, there will be no cricket next summer, I would have felt utterly, utterly bereft and destitute. But now I just think, yeah, well, if there's no cricket this summer, that's just the way it is. That's the way it's got to be. And 2021 will be an unbelievable year.
What's the atmosphere like in Salford at Five Live? I mean, there must be a number of people wandering around with quite literally nothing to do.
Well, it's meant that people have had to become quite creative. I've actually just started a programme a couple of months ago on it was Thursday night, it's now switched to Wednesday night, called The Inside Track with Darren Campbell. Partly supposed to be building up to the Olympics and Paralympics, but obviously that's not happening now. But it's a source of sports news, so sports issues that are developing that we can talk about. And I tell you what, we're getting some unbelievable guests at the moment because you've got all these sports people at home who've got nothing to do with their time. So the first week of lockdown, we had Ben Stokes and his wife Claire on the programme live for 20 minutes from home. The most recent one, we had Dina Asher-Smith live from home for 20 minutes Sunday. Saturday afternoons, when you'd normally get all the live football and rugby, they've had an amazing lineup of guests who've come on. So Frankie Dettori, Justin Langer, the Aussie coach, Tommy Fleetwood, the golf star. They've developed a version of Question of Sport for the radio on a Saturday afternoon as well. So Matt Dawson, Phil Tufnell, Mark Chapman hosting it. So we're finding ways of giving people their sport fix because people still love sport. People listen to Five Live because they love sport. So to try and do those discussion programmes that we would normally do, yeah, is still happening and we're getting great reactions from it.
Ollie Mann, I just want to ask you to talk about the way that radio is regarded at the moment. We're reading a lot on Twitter about, isn't radio coming into its own? It's a golden age. This is what radio is invented for. Do we reach for our radio, either our radio set or our phone or however we receive our audio? Do we reach for radio stations to find out what's happening? Or are we going to telly or to online or social? How do you think that's working out?
Well, I think what's great about radio, especially the sort of diverse range of brands that we have now across the commercial space, in addition to the BBC, is there really is a radio station for everything. And as a podcaster primarily, I thought that I would be listening to more podcasts at this time, because what is most likely to provide the exact on-demand relief, if you like, from what is going on in my head than podcasts? I didn't think the answer would be radio. But actually, because I'm at home and I'm not commuting, I've found that there is enough company and enough assortment and enough variety for exactly what I want across the various different radio stations. I've been listening to things I wouldn't normally listen to at all. I've become much more promiscuous. And with greatest respect to Ellie, although this is a silver lining for her show, I've been listening to a lot more Five Live because I don't like sport. So I've been trying to, you know, experiment with stuff that takes my mind out of what's in my head. So I've been listening to Scala for the first time. Mark Forrest at Drive Time is doing an excellent job of, well, I'm calling it Drive Time, but of course he's changed the show really, so it's music to work to whilst you're in your home office, essentially. I've been listening to Mellow Magic for the first time. You know, normally I'd find that dull, frankly, the music they play on there. I'd much rather listen to the main network, but now's the time. And stuff that I'd previously written off. I mean, Dermot O'Leary, for example, on Radio 2, to be honest, I used to think he was insufferably bland. But now, his kind of laid-back charm and short links, you know, it's exactly what I want. And he's very engaging, actually, in a low-key way.
I think that's called damning with faint praise, isn't it?
No, I think he's very good at it. But it's not what I've ever wanted until now. I turned on the other day and he was playing Dead Ringer for Love by Meatloaf, followed by Landed by Ben Folds. And I was like, did I playlist this show today? This is perfect.
Graham, I want to give you a chance to tell us, in summary, if you would, something about your recent trip to New Zealand.
Yeah, well, I got there on the 12th of March. The day we left, really, the coronavirus wasn't a big deal. It was the day after the Champions League game when Liverpool got knocked out. So there was still big football matches going on. But once we got to New Zealand, it became obvious that the thing was more serious. And the day after we got there, they announced that people who'd just arrived have to self-isolate. Now, we were there like 24 hours before that happened, but that made, you know, we went to visit my wife's parents and relatives, but that made us into lepers and people were a little bit suspicious of us. And with it being such a long way away and isolated down at the bottom of the world, and they've managed to avoid a lot of diseases and stuff in their agriculture, and we were treated like we could have been bringing the thing in, and we ended up cutting the journey short, and that was difficult enough to get flights home. But it was interesting because we even got that sense of things from listening to the radio. The station I listened to the most down there was a station called Magic Talk, which used to be a pure talk station on FM, but then they decided to play like gold music in there, you know, magic type music. But while we were there, because this was ramping up, then they went and dropped all the music again, only about a month after putting the music in. I used to like listening to talk radio when I lived in Sydney, Australia, and it's really in your face and they'll really give it to the politicians. But I heard a bloke called Sean Plunkett. He's on in the afternoon with the free speech hotline for no holds barred common sense talk that you control. And it sounds like it's going to be like... But he gets on and he's pitching for callers and he said, okay, well, we want to know how the coronavirus is affecting you, but I don't want anybody calling up and criticizing the government, which I don't think any other talk show host would do that.
Graham, thank you. We've got Graham Mack here. We've got Ollie Mann. We've got Ellie Oldroyd. And after this message from Stuart Clarkson, we'll find out what our guests have been listening to.
Yeah, Trevor, our podcast script reader has never been more important than at times like these, because clean feed is a great way to connect remotely into your radio station or to make your podcast with different guests in different places. We've been talking about it for months now. This week might be the time to look it up if you are searching for a solution. It's quick and easy. It's very simple to use. Just using your web browser, you can get a quality connection with a decent microphone at either end between two places. And there is a completely free version as well. You can even record all your podcast guests within the browser with the pro version. Clean feed, as I say, won't cost you anything to get started. Just 30 seconds or so to sign up and give it a go, and you'll be making your podcast or getting on air from home in no time at all. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macasso.
Ellie Oldroyd is here, Ollie Mann is here, Graham Mack is here, I'm Trevor Dan, and we're going to find out what we've all been listening to during this lockdown period. I'm going to come to you first, Graham.
I've been listening to Game Changers at Home. Craig Bruce is a program director from Australia who does a podcast where he interviews radio presenters, and he's been doing it from home lately, even though he's the host and has been using the crappiest microphone. All the guests who are radio presenters all sound better than him. And the one I particularly enjoyed was with Ugly Phil, because I hired Ugly Phil from Australia to do breakfast at Fix Radio. And it was nice hearing how Phil was coping with the lockdown in London.
So when did it turn for you? When did you start to get a sense of, oh, okay, this isn't funny anymore? Was there a moment, or did it creep?
Yeah, from a health perspective, because as you know, I have an autoimmune disease. I was diagnosed with MS about 3.5 years ago. And so when they started talking about people with, you know, immune problems, I thought, okay, well, that kind of puts me in a high risk category. When you start thinking about your own health, you know, the humor does tend to go out of it a little bit. So for me, I think that was the moment where I thought, you know, not so much for me, but for people in my lives, I thought, well, gee, you know, I you know, with my girlfriend here, Sam, I don't want to have to get to a situation where she has to, you know, look after me. So yeah, that was a very somber moment, I think.
There's Ugly Phil with Craig Bruce on the Game Changers podcast. Ollie, let's have yours, and let's go to your podcast choice first.
Well, this is just pure escapism. As we all know, Disneyland is the happiest place on earth. I'm a Disneyland nerd, so I can't get enough of people talking about how they built the Epcot Center or how they created the Haunted Mansion and that kind of thing. And actually, my favorite podcast in the world, if you are a Disney nerd, I would really recommend it, is called Hidden Mickeys, which is hosted by Natalie Palamides and Carrie Poppy, two really funny women who just encapsulate everything that I think is wonderful about the spirit of independent podcasting. However, they haven't put out a new episode for a year. So to fill the gap, I was looking around for a new theme park podcast, and I discovered this show. It's called Podcast The Ride. It is Mike Carlson, Jason Sheridan, and Scott Gardner, self-described as three childless men in their 30s, talking in incredible depth about theme park design and experience. I mean, and when I say in depth, I heard a recent one recently. It was just about how to use the monorail to get to one of the hotels on the Disney property back in 11 at night. 2 hours on that. But it really takes my mind off the world. And the clip I've sent you is my favorite episode so far. It's an actor called Griffin Newman, who was guesting on the show, talking about Muppet Vision 4D. Again, 2 hours just about the creation of this attraction at Hollywood Studios, Florida. And you realize listening that it's kind of Jim Henson's legacy. He died whilst they were making it. And I just found it, I'm a Muppet nerd as well, so I found this absolutely fascinating.
So you sent me a podcast, Ollie, that's 2.5 hours long. So I'm not even going to try and find the good bit. We're just going to play a random bit. Here it is.
To get Muppet Vision 3D going with Disney and the deal in general, that it was like a very strenuous, difficult deal that was weighing on Jim and the family and not really fully sewn up by the time they started filming the thing.
A lot of people kind of theorized that
the deal killed him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God.
That's why I've read that.
Oh, God.
The obvious thing is, you know, Jim Henson was a Christian Scientist. When he got sick, he refused to see anybody. By the time he saw a doctor, it was too late. Like, he kind of made his own grave in that sense. But people say that the year or two that he was doing all the Disney negotiations, that he was thinking about selling, that he was working on Muppet Vision, all of that, he, like, physically changed. That he got so worn down by the thing, and I think he kind of psychosomatically started dying.
Well, and think about what he was doing before that. All these oddball, like, labyrinth Jim Henson storyteller, the Jim Henson hour, like all
he's
these weird experimental
following his own muse.
Exactly. And Dog City. Yeah.
And he owned the thing. You know, I mean, it was kind of incredible that it was like he was able to carry these properties, this group of characters over to different mediums different bosses, but he always had control. He pointedly, Muppets Take Manhattan was supposed to be the last thing he ever did with the Muppets.
Really?
He was like, I've said what I need to say. That's why it ends with them getting married.
Oh.
There's something entirely random from podcast The Ride. Let's go to Ellie Oldroyd now. What have you been listening to, Ellie?
I should say I've been listening to a whole range of new podcasts and developing my eclectic knowledge. But actually, podcast-wise, I'm kind of sticking with the things I've been listening to anyway. So the brilliant Tailenders podcast, cricket podcast with Greg James, Felix White, Jimmy Anderson, which I absolutely love and have listened to every single one loyally for over 90 episodes. The Archers is fascinating at the moment, the Archers podcast, because, of course, lots of it was recorded before coronavirus. So they were still going to the pub. You know, they were still going round to coffee at each other's houses. You know, so it's kind of like some fantasy, glorious, halcyon world that doesn't exist anymore. But the one I wanted to nominate actually is another cricket podcast called The Final Word. And it's presented by two Aussie guys called Adam Collins and Jeff Lemon. Adam lives in London now and Jeff is still in Australia. But they're just very, very easy to listen to. They're very funny. They are very sort of, I don't know, you know, they don't respect authority in any way whatsoever. And they're also benefiting from what I mentioned earlier on, which is the fact that you've got an awful lot of very good names out there with a lot of time on their hands. So they sat down and had an hour's conversation with former England captain Nasser Hussain the other day on the most recent podcast. And it was absolutely fascinating to listen to Nasser talking in such detail. I think this is probably not one for you, Ollie, bearing in mind you've already said you're not a sports fan.
Well, it is one for me. So here's a clip from it.
There was a change in mindset for me and the team with Lords. We used to, hate is a strong word, but we used to find it a difficult place to play with the rules and regulations. It was like the Augusta National of the cricketing world. They did things their way and you better abide by their rules or they wouldn't change them. You know, if I'd walk down through the long room on a Wednesday to go and look at the pitch for the toss and it was closed, it wouldn't be like, oh, Mr. Hussain, your England captain will open that door for you. It was like, sorry, I don't care who you are. You go around the long way and you go and look at the pitch by going down that entrance down the side there. We're not opening that door for you. And we used to fight it a bit. And then sort of Duncan came along and Duncan would like take his hat off walking through the long room and look at all the history and the memorabilia. And we would sort of go, oh, OK, let's try and appreciate this place a little bit more. And that for me, and that 100 for me was a sort of change in mindset. We have to appreciate this place. It does things its own way. And the sooner we buy into that, the better.
Okay, there's Nasser Hussain on the final word. Graham, back to you. Oh, you've sent me this one in advance. This is fascinating.
Yeah, Jonathan Brandmeier is a Chicago radio legend. And I've loved Johnny B for years. Listened to him on The Loop, was a very famous Chicago radio station years ago. And he had a Westwood One syndicated show that he even had me as a guest on a couple of times. And I've met him and I've interviewed him, and he's just crazy. And I love him. And he's disappeared off the radio for about the last 3 years. So he sets up a studio in his home and puts his old characters back on from their homes. And on Saturday morning, I woke up to an email saying that, you know, you're not dreaming, we're streaming, we're back. And I listened to this thing, which went out in UK time, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 10 o'clock in Chicago. And Jonathan Brandmeier spoke for 3 hours continuously with no music, no commercials, just him and his guests and phone callers. People were calling into it. And it was just incredible. It's Jonathan Brandmeier streaming.
By the way, to the Singapore lady, I agree. We're all in this together. As Buzz said to me off the air just a second ago, except for those people in Singapore. Hey, Siri, how do you say the Brandmeier broadcast system in Italian?
In Italian, the Brandmeier broadcast system is...
Il sistema di trasmissione Brandmeier.
How do you say, call 833-5JB-SHOW, direct line to a good time in Mandarin Chinese?
In Mandarin Chinese, call 833-5JB-SHOW, direct line to a good time is...
呼叫 8335JB, 显示直线到一个好时间.
How do you say, call our voicemail, you crazy people, 833-LOON-LINE for entertaining, not complaining. Click.
In Mandarin Chinese, call our voicemail, you crazy people, 833-LOON-LINE for entertaining, not complaining. Click is.
打电话给我们的语音信箱,你这个疯子833号线,请致电link.
One moment.
I do, you know what, I think you're right. I do think in Mandarin Chinese, they did say shit show. I heard it. Is there anyone alive out there? We know you're there because you've just blown out BrandmeierShow.com's website. It's going in and out, but keep listening. We're here. We're here for you. Is there anybody alive out there? 833-5JB-SHOW.
There's Johnny B. You're not dreaming. He was streaming. To be a winner, you have to be a beginner.
You're a poet and you don't know it.
I learned that from a YouTube thing about exercising for the elderly. There you go. Johnny B., that's a remarkable bit of radio, Graham. Thanks for that. Now, Radio 2 on a Sunday morning, Ollie. Who listens to that? Well, you do.
Yeah, you wouldn't guess atheist men in their 30s are listening to Good Morning Sunday on BBC Radio 2. But I am, partly because, again, I just wanted a break from the news, but I also wanted a show where they were reflecting, I guess, you know, people confronting a lot of the issues that's being brought about by the current situation, whether that's separation or, I guess, in grim circumstances, death. And, you know, this is the faith slot, isn't it? It's the God botherer slot, Good Morning Sunday. It's not for me, normally. But I tuned in recently, and it's Reverend Kate Botley and Jason Muhammad. They've obviously been put together. You know, you could cynically say it's a bit of a box-ticking exercise. You know, you've got a Muslim presenter and the Reverend off Gogglebox. Somehow, it really works. And it's quite rare, as part of a male-female duo myself, I know how rare it is, to hear a man and a woman where it's not a case of the giggling weather girl laughing at the man's jokes, neither is it the sort of cheeky-chappy sports correspondent bantering with the senior female journalist. These are two equals who are interested in what each other are saying and who respect what each other are saying. And the faith stuff is just part of the conversation rather than overwhelming the programme. So if you're someone of no faith, you can listen to it. And it's quite enlightening, the people that they listen to when they get onto the faith stuff, in the same way, I think, as Fern Britton's programme on BBC One, where she interviews a celebrity, and their faith is just part of the conversation. And I've just been really enjoying it. It's a really comfortable listen on a Sunday morning.
That is For King and Country, Australian brothers inspired by their Christian faith and a favourite of ours here on Good Morning Sunday. We really love them. Recently, they did a live broadcast from their cabin in Nashville titled Together, A Night of Hope, with the rest of the band on video at their homes. And they sang that especially for a British couple in the UK, Tom and Heather, who had to cancel their wedding, and they loved that song. Tears all round, I think. Lots of messages coming in, Kate. Let's do some, shall we? This is from Colin, who says, beautiful sunrise this Sunday morning coming over the M6 Kendal whilst I'm trucking 28 tonnes of flour to Glasgow for the daily bread made to supply the UK. This is what makes life so beautiful. Keep up the great work, both of you. Big hugs to all the NHS workers and every key worker. Have a great day, says Colin, Kate.
Now, Colin, if you're delivering flour, if you want to swing past my house and leave a bag at the end of the drive, that'd be a marvellous thing. It's funny, isn't it? Because all these people that don't bake regularly are buying flour and baking, which is wonderful. But I do think there should be some sort of like quiz as you buy your flour. If you can't name who baked a bread lion in Series 8 of Bake Off, then I don't think you should be allowed any self-raising.
Ollie Mann, you will go to heaven as a result of listening to that. Good Morning Sunday on Radio 2. We're going to have another choice and recommendation now from Ellie. And I believe this is something that we can't listen to yet. Is that right?
Absolutely. I was going to talk about cricket again. Sorry, Ollie, but here's one for you, Trevor. The people behind the Wisden Cricket Monthly magazine, which is obviously a fantastic cricket magazine, and the Night Watchman Quarterly, which is a literary quarterly about cricket, you know, so I'm getting really esoteric here. They decided that basically because most of their contributors are freelance, they needed to try and do something to support them in these really difficult times where there is no live cricket to commentate on. And they're actually putting out a new podcast, which is out, I think, April the 17th is the first time it will come out. And it's going to be a history of cricket commentary over the years. And Daniel Norcross, who is a colleague of ours on Test Match Special, and Adam Collins, previously mentioned as well, will be doing it. And they've said to me they want me on at some point. So I'm not plugging myself. But I think it's just great work that they have made this decision, and the people behind The Night Watchman are taking a 20% pay cut because they have a regular income to be able to put this digital magazine out and support writers in these times as well as broadcasters. So you can't put a clip out of that at the moment, Trevor, obviously. But the other thing I've been listening to kind of linear radio wise is Radio 3. I've been listening to a lot of Radio 3 in the mornings, Essential Classics with Ian Skelly. I don't know if you ever get the chance to put that on, but particularly if you get a chunk of news, you know, kind of a hit of news first thing, then actually just a bit of, you know, real excellent high quality music and nice relaxed Radio 3 chat is what's doing it for me.
Music by Villa-Lobos, played by Pedro Aguiar, on a brand new release which is out on Friday on the Naxos label. Well, music now that came to light in 1961, having been lost during Haydn's own lifetime, a researcher found a single set of parts for a cello concerto in the Prague National Museum, and it didn't take long for it to become popular. So well known these days, you'd imagine it's been part of the core repertoire for years, well, indeed forever. This is the scurrying third movement of Haydn's cello concerto in C. Stephen Isserlis is the soloist, eventually.
Nice to finish with something relaxing from Radio 3. It's customary at this time for me to say, is there any other business? So I'll just do that. Graham, anything else you'd like to mention? And in the words of the Radio 4 Today programme, going to have to hurry you.
Well, as you know, I lost my job with Fix Radio on the 19th of February, and since then the world has changed. So the job market is extremely difficult, and I'm serious. Tomorrow I'm picking up a rental van and I'm going to be delivering pharmaceutical supplies to chemists. Now, I have to pay for the van and the fuel. And I was just wondering right now how many radio station vans there must be not doing anything. And it would help me out if somebody loaned me their branded van.
And if they want to do that, they can get in touch with Radio Today, Graham.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Thanks.
That's a that's made me feel really bad that you're doing that great thing. And I'm not doing anything like that. Ollie, is there anything you wanted to mention?
Yeah, link from great philanthropy into self-promoting plug. I'm not doing anything as grand as what Graham's doing, and that does sound like a brilliant thing to be able to do for the community. But I am continuing podcasting because I usually record from home anyway. The only difference is I'm not face-to-face now. So, yeah, all my podcasts are on my website, ollymann.com. I do four of them. I hope they entertain you.
And Ellie, any other business from you?
Well, I started my career in local radio, in local commercial radio, in Worcester at Radio Wyvern. And then I was at Radio Shropshire for a few years as well for the BBC. And I just know how incredibly valuable local radio is to people at this time. And I just have so much admiration for the colleagues who are in local radio, who are working incredible hours, as we said, still going into the studio. So, you know, they don't have the luxury of sitting at home broadcasting and not putting themselves out there, not putting themselves at risk. And you know, it's not like being on the front line. We're not NHS nurses or care workers. But it does, I think, provide such an amazing lifeline. And to know about how your local area is coping, you know, in a very direct community way, doing the kind of things that Graham is doing as well. And, you know, and hats off to you, Graham, for what you're doing. I've got huge admiration for you. So I just feel unbelievably lucky to be in a secure job with the BBC and with the ability to broadcast from home. I am, overawed with admiration for people who are doing it on less well-resourced, shall we say, than we are at the BBC. So BBC Local Radio, Independent Local Radio, podcasters, I take my hat off to all of you.
And a word for community radio as well.
Of course.
Thank you, Ellie, Ollie and Graham. Here's David Lloyd. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. It's 50 years this week since the BBC introduced a significant raft of changes. They all followed from a report called Broadcasting in the 70s. It was a short, fairly common sense report, concluding that they needed to put the right programmes on the right networks to ensure we knew what they were supposed to be doing.
The four national networks will be still more distinct. Radio 1, strictly pop. Radio 2, carrying light music from Sinatra to Lehar. Radio 3, perhaps only on VHF, with more classical music. And Radio 4 with mostly talk. And there are the prospects of an educational channel. This would need government help. And 40 local stations that could reach 9 out of 10 people in England.
In the report, they concluded that Radio 1 and local radio were all very good, but changes like that had been grafted piecemeal onto a tree planted in an earlier age of broadcasting. So Radio 2 became largely the home of sport. Radio 4 became a little more newsy, with the advent of programmes like PM.
It's PM at 5 p.m. This is William Hardcastle
and Derek Cooper
with the programme that sums up the day, and your evening starts here.
All the news today, what the evening papers say, question time in the Commons, PM stock market report, what to look at and listen to tonight.
And also on Radio 4, the report prompted the start of The World Tonight. Its first presenter, Douglas Stewart.
I, or the presenter, would let them talk. And so we had this agreement that it was Douglas Stewart reporting, not Douglas Stewart opining or anything like that.
There was Analysis 2 and Start the Week and Comedy Series Week Ending.
Doctors who advised patients with sexually transmitted diseases to use false names changed their minds after treating 350 Cecil Parkinson's. And that is the end of next week's news.
Week Ending, just one of the new programmes on a revitalised Radio 4 this week in 1970. Cardiff, Bodada, commercial radio arrived in your town 40 years ago this week in the hands of a community outfit called CBC.
There it is. That is called I Hear You Now from John and Vangelis. The new sound for the capital, CBC 221 metres of the medium wave band. And, of course, that is the record that we've started off with. So, no doubt in 10 years' time now, we'll be saying, what record did we start off with? And we'll be saying, it was John and Vangelis. Good record, that.
Here we are 40 years ago, still talking about it. Happy 40th anniversary to the original team from CBC in Cardiff, later Dragon, and now Capital. That team team actually involved Dan Damon. I think he's with the World Service. He interviewed me for a job at CBC in 1980, said he'd get back to me. He didn't. I suspect that cut never got to air, did it? It's an incredible 25 years since Kenny Everett died, and I suspect he'd be quite pleasantly surprised that people are still talking about him in such adoring terms.
Radio 1, Kenny Everett!
That's a group called the Yellow Balloon who found a song called Yellow Balloon, but after that they couldn't find anything else called Yellow Balloon, so they folded and went away. Now, where are we? Oh, yes, I feel great today.
You do, sir.
Oh, I feel fabulous, sir.
You look great, if I may say
thank
so.
You. Yeah. Thank you. It's my English rose complexion. I feel like going up to the Director General and saying, we've got a few cards today for the signature tune of the news, which goes, well, I haven't got the record, actually. I've left it at home. It's by William Boyce, and it goes... No, you can't beat an orchestra. How about this one?
Kenny, we still love you. He died aged just 50 this week in 1995. 3 years ago now, and Dave Berry's on the move.
That's it for your Friday morning, ladies and gentlemen. It is our last show together on Breakfast, and it is my last day here on Capital. George and Lila are still going to be about, though.
Yeah, still going far.
As announced earlier this year, I have decided that the time is right for me to leave the warm embrace of Capital Breakfast, and this morning was my final show as its host. I must say that being the custodian of this radio behemoth for the past 5 years is something that I'll always be extremely proud of. And during my time here at Capital, I have had the privilege of working with some of the best people I ever could have known. At the risk of making this thing like an hour long by naming everybody, you know who you are, and I love you dearly. I've also been very fortunate, I'd like to point out, to have laughed every day that I've been to work.
Dave Berry moving to Absolute from Capital this week in 2017. So with David Frost launching Virgin Radio on FM in London 25 years ago.
Don't you just hate smug DJs on arrogant radio stations? But hey, from the 10th of April, the talking stops and the music starts. Virgin 105.8. FM.
Dale taking over Pick of the Pops 20 years ago.
To be precise, the week ending the 13th of October 1973, I offer you two climbers outside the 20, new at 39, here's Paul Simon.
BCR launching in Belfast 30 years ago.
Morning, Greater Belfast. This is BCR coming to you live at 7:30 a.m. on Friday, the 6th of April, 1990. I'm Rick Nugent. This is The Breakfast Show. And boy, are we going to have fun today.
The death of Brian Matthew 3 years ago.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
The death of Scottish Radio's Alex Dixon 2 years ago.
Well, if you haven't recognised his voice just now, you've just come down from the moon. We have with us Barry Norman.
The first edition of Home Truths on Radio 4 with John Peel 22 years ago.
Simon, this sounds really almost more interesting than your daughters. I don't wish to be insulting to them. But
the first I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue on Radio 4 48 years ago.
Minsk, Camp Russian Walk.
Wiltshire Sound, launching with Paul Chandler 31 years ago.
Good morning, this is BBC Wiltshire Sound, putting the Wiltshire back into radio. You're listening to Wiltshire Today with Paul Chandler. All you need to know to get your day off to the right start. News, current affairs, information and entertainment.
County Sound, launched by Frank Muir 37 years ago.
And I'm here really just to say four words. Welcome to County Sound. There. Not a wildly exciting announcement, and why should it be? To many of you, I'm just another voice on the air, and this is just another radio station.
Terry Wogan moving from Radio 1 to 2 48 years ago.
Hey, it's a great picture of you in the Radio Times.
Isn't it? It could be anybody. That's what's really great about it, isn't it? Why are you in colour and I'm not?
They know a star when they see one, baby.
Excuse me, it's back to the old routine, isn't it?
And Extra AM launching in the West Midlands 31 years ago.
8 o'clock this morning, XTRA, Extra AM, will begin playing those classic hits. I'm Les Ross, one of those classic hit players. And like you, I'm wondering whether Elvis Presley will turn up to officially launch the station. Not long now.
Those are this week's radio moments.
Thank you very much, David. Special thanks this week to producer Stu Clarkson, who made it all happen from West Yorkshire. I've been Trevor Dan. We'll see you in May for another roundtable.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassar.